morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington. Today is Monday, January the 24th. Here are some stories we're covering for you this morning. The United Nations Refugee Agency says thousands of Eritrean refugees in Ethiopia's embattled northern Tigray province are living under life-threatening conditions with no access to humanitarian aid.
Refugees told UNHCR of increasing preventable deaths, more than 20 over the last 6 weeks.
In Burkina Faso, heavy gunfire erupts inside Camp Sangula Mizana, Ouagadougou's largest military base, amid fears of a coup. And Cameroon says that it has opened an investigation to find out the names and nationalities of 17 people who died Sunday in a fire in the capital, Yaoundé.
We are still at the level of inquiry. We have incident quite serious. There's been people who are dead. Others are injured.
We'll have those stories plus sports coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. Stay tuned. And in our top story, heavy gunfire erupted in a Burkina Faso military base early Sunday, sparking fears that a coup was underway in the West African country. Reporter Henry Wilkins managed to enter the base where a mutiny was taking place after being detained by the soldiers. They later released him with a list of demands. He has this report.
Arriving at Ouagadougou's largest military base, Camp Sangula Lamizana, the sound of sporadic gunfire could be heard coming from inside. As we tried to approach, mutinous soldiers, their faces covered with bandanas, fired shots in the air and shouted at us to leave. I was with a journalist from the Associated Press. We rode to a nearby highway which runs the length of the base to try to get some elevated shots. Soldiers outside the walls of the camp spotted us, and we drove away quickly, but were soon stopped by troops who walked out into the road and fired shots in the air before training their guns on us. We threw our hands up. Shouting in French, the soldiers took our bags, cameras and our motorcycle and walked us along the wall of the camp to a highway intersection where a crowd of about 100 people, some waving Burkinabe flags, had gathered. Shortly after that, around 20 soldiers fired into the air and shouted at the crowd to move back. While some soldiers were shouting at us, others told us it was going to be okay, and they didn't intend to harm us. I began to wonder if we were being taken hostage. At the entrance to the base, soldiers blockaded the gates with armoured vehicles. They took us inside and reunited us with our camera equipment and motorcycle. After around 15 minutes, they told us we were free to go. But not before they called one of the organisers of the mutiny on a phone to give us their list of demands. This is a recording of what was said. The speaker said we want enough troops to assist us in the fight against terrorism, more money and more troops. The soldiers also said they wanted the chief of the intelligence service and the military chief of staff to be replaced. They asked for better care of the wounded and family of soldiers who have died in the conflict, better training which has adapted to terror threats, and the organisation of a permanent military unit on the front lines, not one that changes with rotations. The demands were given by a captain who declined to be named. Burkina Faso has been embroiled in a conflict with terror groups linked to Al-Qaeda and Islamic State since 2015. Rumours of a coup have been rife for weeks after a military base in the north of the country was overrun by terrorists, killing 49 military members. President Roch Kabore fired members of his cabinet and military leadership in December in response. On January 11th, the authorities announced they had arrested members of the military who were planning to destabilise the institutions of the Republic, causing many analysts to speculate a coup plot had been foiled. Speaking on national television Sunday morning, the Burkinabe Defence Minister, Ami Bartholomé Simpaoré, stated that the president had not been detained as rumoured. He also said the motive behind the gunfire was still not clear. Inside the base, however, it was clear the mutineers had taken over the camp entirely and did not intend to relinquish control until their demands were met. By the time we left the base, mobile internet network had been cut and information about further developments related to the mutiny was scarce. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso. Voice of
America! The United Nations Refugee Agency says thousands of Eritrean refugees in Ethiopia's embattled northern Tigray province are living under life-threatening conditions because they have no access to humanitarian aid. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
UN refugee staff members say they were shocked by what they saw when they visited the Mai Aini and Adi Harush camps for Eritrean refugees in southern Tigray for the first time in 3 weeks. Intense fighting and security concerns have prevented them from going there until now. Boris Cheshikov, a spokesman for UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency, says the team found refugees scared and struggling to get enough to eat. He says they lacked medicine and had little or no access to clean water.
Refugees told UNHCR of increasing preventable deaths, more than 20 over the last 6 weeks, linked to the overall decline in conditions and, in particular, the lack of medicine and health services. The clinics in the camps have been essentially closed since early January, when they finally completely ran out of medicine.
Conditions in Tigray have seriously deteriorated since the Ethiopian military incursion into the province in November 2020. The civil conflict since has spread to other regions in northern Ethiopia. An effective blockade has prevented humanitarian aid, including fuel, from reaching the area since mid-December. Cheshikov says extreme hunger is rising because supplies cannot be moved into the region. He says food is running out in the two camps, and refugees have been selling their clothes and few belongings to get food.
If food, medicine, fuel, and other supplies cannot be immediately brought in, and if we continue to be unable to relocate refugees out of harm's way to where we can provide them with life-saving assistance, more refugees will die.
The UNHCR says it wants to relocate the more than 25,000 Eritrean refugees remaining in the two camps to a new site provided by the Ethiopian government in the neighboring Amhara region. The agency is calling on all parties for a ceasefire and guarantees of safe passage to allow the operation to go ahead. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A French soldier has died after a rocket attack on the French army base in Gao, Mali. Annie Rosenberg reports from the capital, Bamako.
The French Armed Forces Ministry released a statement Sunday morning saying the attack occurred on the Gao, Mali, Operation Barkhane military base on Saturday. The statement claimed the attack was carried out by terrorists. Operation Barkhane, France's counterinsurgency military operation in the Sahel, has operated in Mali since 2014. It replaced Operation Serval, the French army's operation to regain control of northern Mali, which had been taken over by Islamists in 2012. This year, after what French President Emmanuel Macron called a drawdown of the French military presence in Mali, Barkhane forces were withdrawn from northern Mali's Tessalit, Kidal, and Timbuktu military bases. The Gao base continues to serve as the center of Operation Barkhane. Popular opposition to the French military presence in Mali has increased dramatically in recent years. France has backed recent sanctions imposed by the Economic Community of West African States that were imposed following a 2026 presidential election plan proposed by Mali's current military government. Thousands of Malians took to the streets in cities across the country this month to denounce the sanctions, with most also denouncing France's presence in Mali. Annie Reisenberg for VOA News, Bamako, Mali.
Cameroon says it has opened an investigation to find out the names and nationalities of 17 people who died Sunday in a fire that caused an explosion in the capital, Yaounde. The blast in a popular nightclub wounded 8 people. The government is calling for calm as thousands of fans visit Yaounde for the ongoing Africa Cup of Nations tournament. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the Cameroonian capital, Yaounde.
Hundreds of people, including Cameroonian government officials, turned out in Bastos, a Yaounde neighborhood on Sunday morning. They watched as neighbors and workers of Leaves, a popular nightclub, and Cameroon's military fire brigade searched 3 torch buildings in the area. Among the civilians helping to search for the injured was 27-year-old Gustave Lamelo.
C'est difficile de savoir qui est qui puisque on ne donne pas les cartes nationales.
Lamelo says civilians and the fire brigade of Cameroon's military have saved the lives of at least 40 people. He says it is difficult to know the names and nationalities of the injured and the dead, because clients do not present identification documents before having access to leaves. Lamale said he is certain that the victims include people visiting Cameroon for the ongoing Africa Cup of Nations. In a statement, the government says an accidental fire at the nightclub spread to a cooking gas store. There were loud explosions from 6 gas canisters, causing panic in the neighborhood. Public Health Minister Manauda Malachi says President Paul Biya was informed of the incident as soon as it occurred. Manauda says Biya has instructed health workers to transport the wounded to Yaoundé Central Hospital.
Le président de la République a instruit que leur prise en charge soit totale et gratuite.
He says Biya has asked the public health ministry to treat the wounded free of charge and that arrangements be made for the dead to be buried in their places of origin after the investigation. He says Biya has instructed his ministry to give psychological assistance to traumatized family members of the injured whenever the traumatized relatives are identified. René Emmanuel Sadi, Cameroon's Minister of Communication, visited the site of the incident. He says it is too early to know the names and countries of origin of the dead and wounded.
We are still at the level of inquiry. The incident is quite serious. There's been people who are dead, others are injured, and investigations are going on. I think when all these things are finished, I will be given the exact information concerning this very serious incident.
Sadi said the death toll may increase. President Biya has called for calm and assured football players, fans and match officials attending the Africa Cup of Nations in Yaoundé of their safety. Cameroon is hosting thousands of people for the tournament, which started on January 9th and will end on February 6th. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Research shows that in Africa, cash remains the leading method of payment. From local markets to shopping malls and to public transportation, the majority of transactions are cash-driven. However, as internet penetration continues to increase, so is the adoption of a broad range of payment options, including digital remittances. In Nigeria, Africa's largest economy, card-based payments have been growing as more fintech companies introduce new products on the market. This has made it easier for the mostly young consumers to buy and sell goods and services while avoiding the restrictive traditional banking system. To understand how cashless methods of payment are transforming commerce on the continent, I'm joined by Adeola Odunowo, a business analyst and entrepreneur based in Nigeria's commercial capital, Lagos. Adeola, let me start off by asking you, how do you, or the majority of people in Nigeria, how do they pay for their goods and services?
Most people in Lagos, especially the rural areas, make payments using the traditional method. And because Lagos is a commercial center with a population of over 20 million, there are a lot of supermarket stores and open markets almost everywhere, every corner you go in Lagos. And most of these open markets do not have access to point of sale machines. They don't have web portals where people can make payments online. So a lot of the payments is always in the traditional method.
And what are some of the challenges of using the current system? How restrictive is the current cash system?
Trust is a major challenge, especially in the area of cybersecurity. Infrastructure reliability is also another one, looking at internet connectivity, access to power. And recently, the Nigerian government introduced a 6% tax on international e-commerce. But I spoke to two business executives whose companies are making waves in Lagos. Segun Afolahan, co-founder of a logistics company, and Chichi Abama, a fashion entrepreneur. Listen to their reactions.
I look forward to a time when customers across Africa will not only be able to purchase products, but also source raw materials across the continent. The online payment system in general has helped grow my business. It has aided my B2C transactions, wherein customers across the continent, particularly Nigeria, Ghana, and Kenya, are able to make seamless payments for the products they purchase off my website.
There's been a steady growth in demand for logistics, specifically for parcel delivery. Our merchants at Sendbox are predominantly social commerce players. They sell on WhatsApp, Instagram, and Twitter. The increased reliability of logistics, an increase in cross-border destinations, has been a strong enabler for the e-commerce growth we've seen across Africa, and we do expect this trend to continue.
Those were two business entrepreneurs, Segun Afolahan and Chichi Abama. They spoke to Adeola from Lagos, Nigeria. Adeola, give us some examples of companies on the continent that have entered this space, and how are they looking to transform paperless transactions in Africa?
Innovative payment gateways in Africa include companies like Interswitch, Paystack, OPay, Flutterwave, and Chipper. As you know, Kenya is also one of the leading countries in the area of digital trade and digitally enabled transactions in Africa. And finally, the recent launch of the Pan-African Payments and Settlement System in Ghana.
That was business analyst and entrepreneur Adeola Odunowo, who spoke to me from Lagos. There is political fallout in Kenya as the country prepares for general elections in August. Most political leaders who have been working together in the past elections are parting ways, as most claim mutual distrust. The One Kenya Alliance is the latest opposition coalition to split after Kalonzo Musyoka and his counterpart Gideon Moi walked out of Sunday's convention of national delegates of the opposition Amani National Congress in Nairobi. Maureen Ojambo has more.
The One Kenya Alliance that brought together opposition leaders including Musalia Mudavadi, Kalonzo Musyoka, Moses Wetangula and Gideon Moi split following the exit of Musalia Mudavadi, who has announced his association with the Deputy President William Ruto. In a meeting on Sunday in Nairobi, Principals Kalonzo Musyoka and Gideon Moi walked out of Mudavadi's meeting. They cited discomfort from a team of politicians allied to Ruto, who was among the invited guests. Speaking in Nairobi during his presidential bid, Musalia Mudavadi, the leader of the Amani National Congress, ANC, said political dishonesty does not permit him to work with former Prime Minister Raila Odinga or with the opposition Azimio la Umoja movement.
For the avoidance of doubt, yes, the ANC stand, yes, which I am privileged to pronounce, yes, is that the specter called Azimio, yes, is not an option when it comes to politics. Trust issues have a very special place in my heart and in my life. A person must be as good as his or her word.
Deputy President William Ruto, who was among the invited guests, said he will work with the leader ahead of Kenya's August 9th polls.
Musalia Mudavadi has stood tall like no other time to only three things. First, I want to confirm on behalf of UDA and my team that we will work with ANC.
Most of the political leaders and aspirants who do not support President Uhuru Kenyatta face arrests and intimidation. Presidential aspirant and one-time opposition member Jimmy Wanjigi blames Raila Odinga, who has joined the government, because of the political blackmail he says he's experiencing. Wanjigi was arrested and charged a few days ago and commented about his ambition to run for president.
What you're witnessing today is the height of impunity on top of persecution. I want to say, as just my good friend here, the court clerk, has told, power has an expiry date.
All the presidential aspirants, including those who have worked together in past elections, have refused to support one another. Many who are considering their own presidential bids claim their opponents are dishonest. Leaders Kalonzo Musyoka, Musalia Mudavadi, and Moses Wetangula are refusing to support former Prime Minister Raila Odinga, who is running for presidency for the fifth time. Kalonzo Musyoka says he is vying to lead the country as well. Former Prime Minister Raila Odinga dismissed allegations that he is betraying fellow politicians. He says that he does not need them to gain power and that he does not owe anyone support. Raila also launched his presidential bid last month and enjoys the backing of President Uhuru Kenyatta, who has since fallen out with his deputy.
I, Raila Amolo Odinga, I do hereby accept to present myself as a presidential candidate at the presidential elections on the 9th of August 2022.
Observers say many Kenyan politicians are dishonest and that many are afraid to offer each other support for fear of betrayal. In 2002, when Odinga supported former President Mwai Kibaki, years later, the president refused to back him in 2007. Later in the year 2013 and 2017 general elections, the deputy president offered his support for President Kenyatta, who promised to help him gain the presidency. But immediately after his re-election in 2017, Deputy President Ruto was ignored by President Kenyatta and his allies. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
And now it's time for Daybreak Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, currently in Cameroon, where he's covering AFCON 2021. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, Jackson. We begin the sport with the second round fixtures of the 33rd edition of the African Cup of Nations being hosted by Cameroon. Tunisia shocked 10-man Nigeria to set up a quarterfinal tie against Burkina Faso on Sunday. Veteran Youssouf Sakini scored 2 minutes into the second half to give previously unimpressive Tunisia a 1-0 second round triumph over 10-man Nigeria in Garoua. Nigeria's hopes of leveling were dealt a huge blow midway through the second half when Alex Iwobi, initially yellow-carded for a stomp on Sakini, was sent off after the referee looked at the VAR monitor. The Super Eagles of Nigeria were the only side to win all three group games in Cameroon, but were largely subdued against the Tunisian side hit by COVID-19. Coach Austin Iguavoen and captain William Troost-Ekong speaks on the Super Eagles' loss.
We lost narrowly, with a man down, and Tunisia only had 2 clear-cut chances, first half, and then the shot. We did well, but it just wasn't to be.
Could have gone either way. I don't think they had many chances before they scored a goal and came out of nowhere, really. But yeah, they got a goal. I think we were a little bit wasteful with some of our chances. And all in all, I want to say that I'm really proud of the team. I think, the young team that we have today, one thing that we could say is that we left the pitch given everything we did. And we can't control the outcome sometimes, but today's one of those days.
Tunisian forward Issam Djibali said though Nigeria is a good side, the Carthage Eagles were prepared to beat them.
Of course, it's just a football game. Like I say, hard luck. Nigeria is always a big, big, big country in football. They have many good players. But the result at the end, the game plays at the small details, and we give all in today.
In the earlier game, Burkina Faso held off a gallant rear guard action from 10-man Gabon to advance to the African Cup of Nations quarterfinals with a 7-6 victory on penalties after a 1-1 draw in their last 16 tie in Limbe. Ismaila Ouedraogo netted the decisive kick to ensure they are the first side into the last 8 after an incident parked an energy-sapping clash. After Burkina Faso's keeper Bertrand Traoré scored early, 10-man Gabon took the match into extra time, following a dramatic last-minute equalizer. Tunisia, Nations Cup winners in 2004, will now face Burkina Faso in the last 8 on Saturday, the 29th of January. In mixed martial arts news, Cameroonian UFC heavyweight champion Francis Ngannou dug deep in his first title defense and won the first fight of his career by decision 48-47, 48-47, and 49-46 at the UFC 270 against Cyril Gane. With the victory, Ngannou unifies the UFC undisputed heavyweight title. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Garoua, Cameroon. It's back to you, Jackson, in Washington.
And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm Jackson Vung.